Guard Your Grill Boxing. This one you thought we was out. They pulled us back in. Shout to the Godfather 3. Yeah. The one we tend not to talk about, but still. in any case, what man, we are.
People made it out to be.
Yeah. So, man, wow. As we're making this, doing this show today, much of the talk in boxing today. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on. Don't get me wrong. We're going to, do a quick recap of things, but we're kind of experiencing something very similar before we got on the chat as it concerns one particular fighter who, listen, let's just say what it is. He is still the current face of boxing. He's the big cash cow in boxing, and that is Canelo Alvarez, okay? Even as recent as, like, last month, we were hearing rumblings of who he could be facing this, Cinco de Mayo weekend, which has become pretty much his staple for, since he's really been at the helm of being the guy in boxing. And we were hearing different names, and as of a few days ago, okay, we were hearing rumblings, through the sport as it concerns the potential of Canelo and the PBC maybe having some, financial issues. We're not going to get into we were just, we hear things, the smoke, there's fire, we hear it, we talk about it, but as we're making this, there is word coming out now, and we'll hop into this, but I just kind of to preface.
Right.
We are hearing that Canelo Alvarez will be facing Jermall Charlo May 4th in Las Vegas for Canelo's Undisputed Super Middleweight Championship. So that'll be kind of the main event course we'll kind of get into. And then, other things trickling from that, other fighters that maybe were in the running, maybe still are in the running. But again, anything dealing with Canelo Alvarez always has a lot of eyeballs on it. Like I said, he's still the cash cow of boxing, and all the attention really derives around him. He's supposed to make an announcement as you guys are watching this. He's going to make an announcement, let's just say today, as when you're going to see the video, on Azteca, who are the distributors of his fights in Mexico. So he's supposed to make this announcement about his career plans going forward. So, we're going to, get an official word of what's going on in Canelo world. Before we got on, man, we talked about, covering or recapping a fight that, look, we all watched, myself, yourself, and, we were on an Instagram chat with, the whole crew and everybody in ROD. Took place on ESPN on a Thursday night, pre
bowl. They have been two times, but it's top ranked, these Thursday night fights.
We were, back in the day, man, we were used to Tuesday night fights, and even
it's crazy how that was normal. I'll be seeing people in the comments like, a fight on a Thursday, these fights used to come on during the week, Tuesdays, I've
watched a
fight on a Tuesday before.
Yeah.
On USA Network.
USA Network. Tuesday night.
I forget what it was for. Omar Weiss, I want to say.
Yeah, you know what? I
think you're a little short dude.
Yeah. So we had the return of Teofimo Lopez defending his WBO Junior Welterweight Championship against Jermaine Ortiz, who a lot of us got familiar with in his fight against Vasily Lomachenko, who lost, but made a pretty good effort in that fight, all things considered. So I'll toss it to you, man. It was a very interesting night of boxing. Well, you know what? Before we get to him, but that fight, we saw Keyshawn Davis prior to that against Jose Pedraza, who we've gotten used to seeing, but give me your take before we hop into that fight. Is it Keyshawn Davis? Because, he's obviously had some outside the ring issues. You know, I'm not going to get into full detail with it, but give me your take on his performance.
I thought for what he had in front of him, you know, you only can do what's asked for what's in front of you. Pedraza is shocked. Let me just get that out there. You know, he's a shell of himself.
Yeah.
He was basically there as an opponent, which I kind of figure, given the circumstances of what took place with Nair Albright, kid that's from here, from Philly, they gave Keyshawn a tough fight. You know, Keyshawn won the fight, but it ended up being a little bit more tougher than they anticipated. And so I knew that they would give him kind of a layup just to kind of get his confidence back, like you mentioned, the outside the ring stuff. You know, Keyshawn is an interesting fighter because, and I always tell people this, you know, we always talk about this, Roberto. Everybody's not going to be a defensive, like the way Shakur and Devin Haney fight. But, you know, I think Keyshawn is more on a level of like a Shane Mosley, Meldrick Teller, more offensive-minded fighter. So with those guys, you'll probably see him get touched up a little bit more than you'll see like a Shakur or Haney. So people are going to misconstrue that with him being a bad fighter or a flawed fighter. But I just think that we became enamored with defensive fighters because a lot of these new guys are a lot more technical. But Keyshawn, it's not that he's not a technical fighter, but he's going to get tagged in the process of getting his shots off. You know, he likes to throw a lot more combination than those guys. You know, it's hard because he fought a dude that was just there to be in front of him. But right. He did what he was supposed to do, and he got the guy out of there. You know, I got to believe going forward, they got to make it, you know, a little bit somewhat more challenging. And I think he'll be in position to fight for a world title, I would probably say, if not the end of this year, the beginning of next year. You know?
Okay.
And
you know, that was the next question I was going to get to was, at this stage, is Keyshawn at a point where he needs to fight like a top? I mean, again, it's subjective what you rate like a top 5 or 10 in the division. Yeah. But, you know, he's called, you know, what's crazy is, and, you know, we didn't mention Shakur, you know, the retirement talk.
Right. We didn't get to that. Yeah.
We found out Emmanuel Navarrete is moving up to 135, and he's going to fight for the vacant WBO title. And Keyshawn was kind of calling him out, which, funny enough, Shakur was kind of calling out too, Bob, you know
Bob is not doing it right. Like, that's way too premature for Keyshawn. Like, that's not happening. If anything, that's a fight that they would try to convince Shakur to take, or Lomachenko, you know, is still over there. Like, I don't think Shakur is getting, I mean, Keyshawn is getting that just yet, you know. You know, it's the top ring way, the way they're bringing them along. I think that, you know, like I said, it'll start getting, you know, a little bit more complex as the list goes on. And there's no Jorge Linares is around, you know, what's my man name? Jojo Diaz, you know, these type of guys that you would normally gamble as you can't go pick on him. Like, so, you know, they'll get creative and, you know, pick some names out there that, like I said, somewhat of a threat. Better step up in competition, but they're going to slow walk it. I don't think they're going to rush Keyshawn. And that's why I said by the beginning of next year, he should be ready to fight for a world title. I don't think it's going to be this year. You know,
no, I don't either. I think you're right. Like, I think the beginning kind of is like proverbial.
He's ready now, but he's not. You got to let this stuff grow. I'm telling you, because. Yeah. There's still some things he got to tighten up and work on, you know?
Yeah. I agree with that. I actually agree. And
that's not a bad thing.
No, it's not. And Top Rank has had a history of really developing their fighters until they get to a point, right, up here.
Yeah, it's always been that way, you know.
It's been that way, and that's not a bad thing, yeah. You know. So the 135 division is interesting because, again, we mentioned Shakur. He's coming off that De Los Santos win that, you know, was, you know, didn't get a great reception from even hardcore fans that we know of that really didn't, you know, care for the fight and or Shakur's performance. And look, not to give him an out, but, you know, he did admit following a little bit after the fight, he had an injured hand going into the fight. He didn't want to make excuses. But then as a reason, he makes this claim he's retiring, you know. And now look, I had a dollar for every fighter that called retirement because they were a little, whether you're impatient about not being able to land a particular fight. You know, we've heard like rumors about, you know, trying to sit out his contract or get out of his contract with Top Rank. And
yeah.
I mean, who knows, you know, like who knows, but.
We don't know until we know, right?
Right. But at the same time, I think Shakur Stevenson is like in a very difficult position right now where he kind of has to. And it's weird. It's like you don't want to erase the wrong. He did win the fight, you know, it's not like he lost. But the reception from a lot of people that saw the fight, they you know, again, because we got the hardcore fans and then you got the casual public that at some point come on board, and there's a lot of them, but then there's a little bit of these guys that didn't care for. So that you and I understand, like there's what happens in the ring and then there's the cosmetics that, you know, this is a business. As it concerns just, you know, putting yourself out there and your performances do matter at a point. And look, with us saying that, it's not from the perspective of us saying like you got to go in there and it's a blood and guts kind of thing. I mean, that's not what we're saying at all. But I think in general, I think he even knows and he kind of admits this where he has to have a better outing in his next fight. Now, again, now we're kind of here where he's talking retirement and he's like being very adamant about it. But I always say, you know, I'll believe it when I see it.
Right.
But he's the WBC lightweight champion. May 12th, we're going to have a new IBF champion in that of either Vasily Lomachenko or George Kambosos.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yep.
Right now, I was hinting at the idea that could be a matchup for Shakur Stevenson fighting the winner of that. It'd be a unification fight, and then the WBA champion is. I mean, let's just say what it is. It's Gervonta Davis. Okay, like you know, they still have it listed vacant on ESPN, but like at the end of the day,
right. Yeah.
So the lightweight division is pretty interesting, and I haven't even mentioned Frank Martin, who, remind you, we haven't seen fight. In some time now. So that division is really interesting, but what's interesting is that Top Rank really has the bulk of those fights when you consider all the players involved, you know? So it's going to be interesting to see what Shakur's course of action is. Because look, as we're recording this, he hasn't vacated the title. So,
I think that this is my speculation. My input, like I don't have no concrete sources on. I just think that somebody got in his ear. Let's just say this: some people that he's really close and hang around with, you know, didn't have the greatest working relationship with Top Rank. So I gotta believe that some of this, it might not be all, but a lot of it, I think, is contract based, and he won't be the first guy. Mikey Garcia sat out what 2 years. Before he got his contract resolved. And that's a slippery slope of sitting out, you know. Because contracts is tricky. Like, you could be under contract with a fighter. I mean, with a promotional company. Is it just is a calendar year? Or do you owe them fights? Like,
I think he's got one fight left.
He got one fight left. Okay.
Some of the dates, he's got one fight, meaning Shakur. I think he's got one contractual obligation.
He's got one contract. Okay. So my gut is he's going to sit and wait and see what falls. and see what belt he can go for. Don't rule out him fighting Lomachenko this year, Shakur.
That makes, if he beats Cambosos, that makes the most sense.
I think he's probably going to do that, and then he'll probably leave Top Rank after that.
Yeah.
That's what I'm be happening this summer, by the way.
Yeah, I'm not convinced. I mean, personally, I'm not convinced he's retired.
Didn't Tank retire for a week or two or a month? I forget.
Yeah, man. That's what I'm saying. Like, if I had a dollar, you know, like. All right, so circle back. Teofimo Lopez, Jermaine Ortiz.
A young Top Rank fighters. Another one that got screwed me. It's like, what the heck is going on over there?
Yeah, I mean, listen, this is one of those occasions. And it's funny, it's not that the fight played out exactly the same, but the arguments, right?
There's some similarities, for sure.
There's a good amount of similarities, but, you know, we saw Jermaine Ortiz in a fight with Teofimo Lopez where he came in, I think he was like a 10-1 underdog.
Right.
Let me tell you, when that fight culminated, we were all on the chat, and we were like, you know, I like personally, and I'll throw it to you. I mean,
right.
Based on my I've only watched this fight once. Okay, I'm somebody that I understand you have to thoroughly beat, like,
right.
I get it. You have to beat the champion to get a decision. But I'm also somebody that believes in the 10-point must system per round.
Right.
When that fight ended, and this is my scorecard. I had it 115-113 for Jermaine Ortiz.
Right.
How did I score that?
Yeah.
I scored it based on Teofimo Lopez being the aggressor, but you talk about it too, effective aggression, right? Yep.
Mm-hmm.
That's not, in my eyes, what Teofimo Lopez did. I feel what he did was he tried to get in close quarters with Jermaine Ortiz, and Jermaine Ortiz uses footwork to get out of the way, and in a lot of those instances was landing counter shots, clean counter shots. Now, what ended up happening was, and you and I both saw this, Teofimo Lopez showed his emotions in this fight. He started telling him to come to the corner and fight him and all this stuff. And to me, that showed a sign of frustration. Okay. And what he didn't do, and I think, you know, Tim Bradley kind of brought this up a bit in the fight, was he wasn't cutting the ring off. And we've seen fighters that have fought guys who are on the move. Okay, and this is a skill set that's learned in the gym, you know, by the teachers in the game.
Yeah. Which he has a Cuban trainer, by the way, Jermaine Ortiz.
Right, exactly. There is an art of cutting the ring off on a fighter and not giving him, what I like to say, is giving him the real estate.
Yeah.
To move, to work, to land counter. And Teofimo Lopez, for the entire fight, never managed to cut that real estate off on Jermaine Ortiz, and or being able to, again, read his movements and kind of time him as he was coming out in the same direction every single time. And I'm sitting here watching this, and I'm like, he's going to his right. How are you not cutting off and being able to kind of, you know, again, cut the real estate off? So, for me, I base it off of Jermaine Ortiz. Was it an offensive affair? No, it wasn't.
Yeah.
But I scored it based on the fact that Teofimo Lopez, I don't feel, landed the cleaner shots. I don't think he even landed anything super authoritative. And by the time the fight was over, and even going into the 12th round, I gave that 12th round to Jermaine Ortiz. You know, so how did you, like, I mean, a lot. We watch boxing very similar, but like, how did you view this and how it culminated? Like, how did you see the fight play out?
Well, first, let me say this. Remember,
Yeah. We lose train. Yo, oh, there you go.
Well, what I was saying was nobody expected Jermaine Ortiz to box off the back foot, southpaw stance, and keep that up for 36 minutes. You know, no, let's just get that cleared out the way first. Also, what I didn't know was that I never really kind of paid attention to his corner. I didn't realize he had this this Cuban trainer. I forget his first. I know his last name is.
In for this fight.
40 minutes. I know his last name is Hernandez. Forget his first name. So the plan was to use a stage left, stage right sort of type of defense. Lateral movement, feint, put a jab in his face, and don't put yourself in harm's way if you don't need to be. When an opportunity is there to counter, you counter. If not, just keep your feet moving.
Right.
All right, so I started thinking about a fight that was kind of somewhat similar, Aris Landry-Lahr and Canelo, where it was Lahr, you know, very frugal with his punch output. Canelo trying to cut the ring off and never stopped trying to dig to Lahr's body, while I'll give Canelo credit at versus what Teal didn't do. So I need people to understand, because I think people forget how boxing works. If I'm in a fight and I have a physical disadvantage, which Jermaine Ortiz clearly did. He moved up from 135 to 140. Let's not forget that. So he's in a weight class he's never been in. T.O., this is what, his third or fourth fight at 140. Secondly, T.O. is a better athlete than Jermaine Ortiz. He's faster and he's stronger. Jermaine Ortiz is a guy that got technical skills but can be suckered into a war. So for the first time in his career, he had a new trainer, new weight class, and he was asked to fight a disciplined fight using footwork and occasional counters. Where on the other hand, Teo, just for Josh Tolan, was able to do whatever it is he wanted to do. He had a guy that wasn't going to stand in front of him, never gave him the same look twice. He got frustrated. Like you said, didn't land anything of any significance. Some rounds was just like, you know, it was tough to judge because it wasn't a whole lot going on. But for the most part, and I put this on my post, Max always got this line. He says, well, what fighter would you rather be in a round?
Mm-hmm.
That's what you got to ask yourself. And be honest with yourself. Not, well, I would rather be Teal because the other... No, not your personal opinion. Because you think the other... Who would you rather be?
Right.
Who made the other guy look bad? Because boxing also, although it's about hitting, it's also about not getting hit. So not necessarily, that's not a generalization of the sport, but that is a part of it. So his part that he played, he could not put himself in harm's way, because if he gave a minuscule of a showing, of putting himself out there, committing to a second or third punch, then T.O. starts his onslaught of his athletic stuff that he liked to do. I just think, like you, the fight was close. If you had it 115, 113, 114, 114, it was a close fight.
Yeah.
You know, and because it didn't play out the way people thought it was going, a lot of people thought he was going to wash Jermaine Ortiz. Remember, most people was like, oh, you know, why is he picking this guy? It's that. This is crazy, though, when you think about it. Speaking of top rank, this is so unlike them, this matchmaking, when it comes to T.O. career. So then I start questioning this stuff, like, are they serving him up to be out of there? Because Sandor Martin, this Jermaine Ortiz, well, maybe they thought Jermaine Ortiz was a layup, so maybe they didn't know. But, you know, you just start thinking. But then again, the other side is like, well, we're giving you somewhat winnable fights, but because you're so mentally challenged when it comes to, as soon as a fighter starts talking to you, you mentally shut out. When a guy don't sit still and stand still in front of you, you mentally, like, I thought the way he was emotionally triggered in that fight was embarrassing. Like, for this to be one of your prized possession, stable guys, He mentally checked. This is the part that killed me with people. He mentally checked out of the fight. The second round, once he realized Jermaine Ortiz wasn't going to be a stationary target and got on his bike, he said, I'm mentally done. You and I both know when a fighter do that whole stand here, come and fight me, that's cold for I'm confused and I can't figure this out.
Yep.
And that's what happened.
Yep. Yeah, 1,000%. 1,000%. He brought up Sandor Martin. Okay. Like
Sandor Martin probably beat him. And he dropped him twice.
You know, so it's I'll be honest, man. I at this stage, I mean, look, like Teofimo Lopez is, you know, at one point when he went into the Lomachenko fight, he was still viewed as a prospect. Not a prospect, but
that was a big step up in him for that. And now I just watched that fight again for the third time. I haven't watched it in a while. Lomo climbed back into that fight. People forget that.
Yeah.
He climbed back into that fight. And this is another thing about Tio, right? If you want to be a special fighter, you have to use that A word, adjustments. I've yet to see him make an adjustment in a fight when stuff ain't going his way.
That's a really good point. That's a really good point. Look, we go back to the Kambosos fight right now. Like, you know, he was like sick and, you know, he had health issues. He goes up to 140 and we bring up the Sandor Martin fight. A guy that did what? Was moving, countering, and he didn't, like, Teal didn't come out of pocket like how he did in this fight. But you make a good point. And I always say this with the top elite level guys.
Yeah.
They know how to adjust.
Gotta they know how to adjust.
Style. And this goes back to the point I was making about what I think fans, what happens sometimes is they like certain styles. And because somebody was on the move and was countering and it wasn't an offensive affair, they didn't like that guy. So they picked this guy to, you know, he really won. That's not how you score boxing. Now, look. That 117-111 card was a
trick. That was crazy. That's what I'm saying. People hear that and like thinking, no, that fight was very, very close. Let me give you a really quick example about adjustment, right? Gervonta when he fought Pitbull Cruz. 3-week notice, he took the fight. Cruz came out like a little mini Mike Tyson. A style that he wasn't used or really wasn't prepared for. He had to do something that he's never done in his boxing career, and that's box off the back foot. Right. Like he had to go back foot on that fight. So what I'm saying, what we're saying is, Gervonta didn't get mad and get frustrated. He was like, I got to adjust.
Got to adjust. That's a great point. That's a great point. And the elite level fighters at this level, that's what you got to do. Because guess what? At this level, not everybody's going to be in front of you like that. You know what I mean?
You remember when Corey Spinks fought Jermaine Tucker?
Yes.
What did Emmanuel Stewart say in his corner? That was the infamous.
Oh, man. Like, yo, he was telling me, man, you know, I told you we should have fought this guy.
but who did he say we should have fought?
Oh, man. I forgot.
Let me help.
Edison Miranda. That's who it was. Yeah.
Right in front of him. So Emmanuel Stewart, who's a world-class Hall of Famer, doctorate of boxing, like, he knew that, oh, this is a bad stop. Because you know why? Emmanuel Stewart respected sport. And he know what Corey,
right.
When he said Corey was running, all he said was, he's trying to win this bullshit title. Somehow he worded and phrased it. But he know Corey Spence's pedigree and his bloodline where he comes from. Yeah. He like this dude knows. He knows and understand. Corey Spence is like, man, you're high. Not a big dude.
Yeah, yeah.
He's not a big, real big dude. Yeah. Jermaine Tala is what, 6'1", 6'2"?
A middleweight.
Middleweight, strong as hell. Corey Spence was just in the ring with Zab Judah two fights ago.
Yeah.
Now he's fighting for the middleweight title. So if I'm fighting for the middleweight title, I'm a welterweight. I don't have knockout power. What am I supposed to do?
Yeah.
Use my physical, my footwork, and my slip game.
Yeah. Yeah, and look, and this is the thing, man. Like, you kind of hit it in the beginning. This boxing is not a Friday night, like how me ROD like to joke, Friday night bar fights. Right. You know?
Right.
It's a sport, and the ultimate goal is to hit and not get hit. Yeah. And I think sometimes people just get lost in what kind of styles they like.
Well, that's what it is, yeah. And look, I'm not saying, we both collectively not saying that Jermaine Ortiz couldn't have did more. Just like when the Laura conversation always come up, like, more could have been done. I'm not denying it. But a person shouldn't be, you know, they shouldn't be, like, punished for you for fighting that style either. Right. And I feel like that's what people doing. Like, this dude, he posted on my page earlier, he was like, oh, you guys are trying to run with a narrative. Because you know, Jermaine Ortiz really lost. And I'm like, all right, let's take who we thought won or who we didn't win out the picture. That fight was all of, I'm gonna be honest, it really even wasn't about Jermaine Ortiz. That was about Tio.
Yeah. Yeah.
And him not what he wasn't able to do.
I just got
really, and we can transition to where we're going next about what's next for him. And the name that's being brought up is, what is it, Sabria Matias? I don't know, I forget your name. Sabria Matias. And although that's a fight, I think that's somewhat winnable for Tio, like me and you talked the other day, that guy do a lot of this. He got a lot of this. Got awkward punches, and we saw Tio mentally get broke down before with lesser tier. All due respect to George Campos, who I think is a cool-ass individual, but I think Matias is a whole nother level than George Campos is. Oh. We saw how that played out when he got in his head.
Yeah, I'll tell you, man, it's a mixed bag at this point, because with Matias, you're dealing with a guy who he's a power puncher, but you kind of hinted at it too at some point, man, where you got to look at these dudes' records when they have like 23-0 with like 20 knockouts.
And yeah,
you got to pay attention to those guys. And the thing with Matias, he's a guy that he has, like, he applies mental pressure. And we saw it in the last fight. Okay, the last fight he had, that I think the dude was from Kazakhstan or whatever.
Yeah, he's a European.
Yeah. Beginning the first round, he gets hit with, like I think it was a straight left, and he got staggered.
But definitely went to the shots, for sure. Right. Just
continued pressure. And you know what he was doing? He was cutting the ring off. And little by little, it didn't happen right away, but it was chipping away, a chipping away, a chipping away. And like you said, he has an awkward style, but the guy quit in the corner because he couldn't take it anymore. And then It wasn't so much of the punches. I'm telling you, a lot of it was this mental pressure. And when we talk about Teofimo Lopez, and just like you had brought up, his reaction to things doesn't speak of somebody that in the middle of a fight can say, okay, this isn't working. Let's do this. Let's do this. Yeah. Let's do this. And against somebody like Matias, who isn't going to be, you know, moving around. He's going to be right there in front of you. Now, like, to be fair, that's more suitable for what Teofimo looks good in.
Oh, for sure. That's what I said. Yeah, right. From a style perspective, it makes all the sense in the world.
But I'll say this too, though. There is still things Teofimo does that he needs to be careful, even against somebody like this, where he brings his hand down. And especially with somebody like that, because I would argue Matias, out of all the champions, that he's the biggest puncher. You know, he's somebody you're not going to want to, like, test your power against, you know, because Tio can punch, but he you in that kind of situation, you want to be more of the boxer puncher, more so than trying to be this acrobatic puncher. Like he at points he was trying to do like you know, shot the Street Fighter, the Ayukin uppercuts, like that just weren't working. You know, you just at this stage he's got to be careful. And you know, granted, Teofimo's been at 140 for a little bit, but that'd be easily the biggest puncher he'd face. Now that's one guy, and word is, I mean, not even word, it's pretty apparent now. He's signing a deal with Matchroom, with
Dazone.
He left the PBC. You know, there was nothing there. I mean, there's fighters there, but like he I think he's gonna have a more opportunity to fight guys. But then you think of a fight with Devin Haney and Teofimo Lopez, and you look at what Teofimo struggles against. And you look at what Devin Haney does best. And again, not to play the triangle theory, but...
It's the style.
That could be a very difficult fight, man. I mean, I guess it just the question becomes, like, what's really next for Teofimo Lopez? When you consider, I mean, look, he was calling out Terrence Crawford. And it's like... And... I think... Realistically,
Puerto Rican fighters. It was funny because he said he has his way with Puerto Rican fighters. Didn't get outboxed by one like
two days later. Right? Yo, I guess we'll see, man. I mean, I think at this stage, Teofimo wants a big fight. And speaking to Danny, I mean, I guess like you know we got the official word. Him and Ryan Garcia are fighting April 20th. You know, we'll touch on that like at a later date, but. I guess we'll see with Teofimo, man. I mean, it's one of those situations where he came out the winner, but we're kind of like,
yeah,
you know, on shaky grounds, man. So I don't know, but so let's hop right into it, man.
the decision.
Yeah, the decision. well, to kind of before we get to that, we finally. A few weeks ago, got the official word, you know, as it concerns, you know, we broke the news, and really, both you and I were talking about this a year prior, and when it concerned the PBC, their departure from Showtime, and it was official, kind of saw the writing on the wall, but then shortly after that, after rumors kind of circulating around about what their next destination was going to be, their next platform, it was announced. They're going to be on Prime Video, which, you know, out Amazon. And the first fight we're given, and I had said this when they made the deal. I said they should put the first fight on the platform, get the fans and the casual public tuning in. A lot of people have Amazon. Well, what do? They slap us with a pay-per-view and the main event being Keith Thurman or Tim Tszyu, WBO junior middleweight champion against the now almost two-year hiatus close to Keith Thurman. There's other fights on there. Rolly versus Pitbull. Alara versus he's fighting a mandatory Michael Zafara. And then
it's a mixtape.
It is a mixtape. Shout to Duop, shout to Clue. It's a mixtape.
Ron G. Yeah, I mean, this is a mixtape.
Craig G. Yeah, man, wow. Yeah. We're dating those, man. But, yo, that's our mixtapes. That's what mixtapes were to us. But they made that announcement, and that's happening March 30th. We'll touch on that. You know, that'll be coming up shortly. But the big story going into 2024, and one of the big fights, and this was on our wish list, or one of the fights, we should say, dealt with Canelo Alvarez. You know, there was rumors that the likes of Terrence Crawford, the likes of David Benavidez, and now none of those fights were happening in May, but we were hearing talks even last month that he could potentially be facing Jermall Charlo, and again, you know, when I started the show off, we are hearing, and you guys maybe got the word now, or maybe you didn't, but it looks very apparent that Canelo Alvarez is going to be facing Jermall Charlo.
May 4th.
Yep. In Las Vegas for the Undisputed Super Middleweight Championship. And I'll throw it to you, but it's interesting how both Mel and Maul, for years, were kind of like these guys that, you know, we were wanting to see Canelo in the ring with. Now, I want to date back maybe 6 years ago.
It was a while ago.
A long time ago. And as boxing goes, things change. You know, fighters go through things. Fighters have their own pathways. And eventually, everybody kind of comes back and meets in the middle somehow. But needless to say, Jermall Charlo in particular. I mean, Mel fought Canelo in September. We saw and didn't pan out very well for him. And look, Jermall is a former undisputed junior middleweight champion. He got to that point. He lost to Tony Harrison. He beat Tony Harrison. He fought who was it? Was it Castaño? I forget. Castaño was the guy. Okay, so Jermall at the very least conquered a division, and then you know there was this, you know there was the talk of him fighting Bud following the Errol Spence fight, but then you know we kind of get hit over the head with oh hey, I got the you know I won the Canelo sweepstakes. Didn't pan out well for Jermall. I mean, I don't even think I gave him a round in that fight. So now he's fighting, Canelo's fighting Jermall, who, mind you, was almost 2.5 years out of the ring. He comes back on the undercard of the Benavidez plant fight. Benavidez and Boo Boo fight. Fought Benavidez, his older brother, the former welterweight, Jose Benavidez. Again, did he look terrible? No, but we've seen Jermall appear. You know, we've seen, you know, we go back to the J-Rock fight, which is like some years ago already. But 2.5 year absence, a middleweight run that is hard to speak of. I mean, there's really the biggest name he fought there was Dervianchenko, who, no disrespect, you know, might have been overrated through his, you know, through this entire, because he was never a world champion, you know, no disrespect, but, you know, there's pagodas here, there's levels. So here we are 5-6 years later, and he's getting a shot at Canelo Alvarez May 4th.
Yeah.
I can't think of anything else of what this is than Jermall getting the payday that he just never got during the time when he was at middleweight. So, I mean, give me your take. I mean, granted, again, like, as we're making this,
yeah,
we're probably going to hear the word, but
oh, what's happening?
Yeah.
I think you summed it up perfectly. I think this is like a farewell gift. It's a cash-out gift, like you said, for being loyal soldiers and being promised something that was never really awarded to you. So now, on the way out the door for you guys being loyal, we thank you for your service by giving you a life-changing purse, both brothers, collectively. Because Jermall, I mean, then I showed you that story. I was just laughing, like, somebody, I don't know who wrote the article, but they was like, oh, this compelling story of the big brother vision and little brother's loss, like,
the brother who he's not even talking to, not to get into any personal stuff, but, like, they
this is Rocky. Like when he avenged Apollo Creed's victory over Ivan Drago, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know what I mean? Like, this isn't look, I'm not mad. Look, get your paper, but my thing is like, if it's going to be, I'm cool with this because we already knew Meg was going to be a tuna,
right?
Than or Jermall Charlo, we only care about September. With all due respect, September is the big date, because if it's not Bud, then cool. Then we hoping that it's David. We hoping tomorrow when he take his talents to wherever he take them to. It's funny that this theatrical.
It's like LeBron, yo.
You know, he's flexing his power, you know, is cool, I understand. So, and this creates drama. This is the way you sell the Jermall fight, for one. Yeah. Let's not forget that. I think he's using Jermall, too, as a pawn to launch this Benavidez fight, too. If we still don't know, like you said, when this thing air, we'll know who. Right. And I'm like, there's still hope there that it could potentially be Crawford, you know, but I don't, the way it's looking like it's going to be two PBC fighters.
Yeah.
And Benavidez being a PBC fighter. But look, if that's the case, then that's even just as equal. We just want to see a great fight in September.
You're right. And I think it's funny you mentioned that. It's almost like we're looking at May like a foregone conclusion. It's no disrespect to Jermall. But again, like, when you're that inactive, and this is going to be your first legitimate fight at super middleweight, you know.
He just right.
Now, look, I mean, to be fair, okay, you know, the prospect of the Crawford fight has been there, and I've seen the arguments from many about Crawford.
It makes sense. Yeah.
Totally get it, but I mean, to also can be contextually fair, Crawford's a little bit of a different animal. You know, do you have to consider the weight? Of course.
Right.
But one guy is in the gym all the time. He's always working. The guy is laser focused, and he's wanting to, between both of them, you could kind of tell who would be going in there to win and who'd be going in there solely for the check. You know, and that's kind of, I guess, the question mark going into this is like, is this another Mel situation where I feel Mel went in there for a check? I mean, he fought like that.
I think he's going to put up more of an effort.
Fight. Right.
Because he got the pressure now up to do that. And I think the styles is a little different.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny because I used to think Jermall was the better boxer. But actually, has the better footwork, you know, off going backwards. Where Jermall is more downhill, you know. So I think that he'll be more aggressive, but it's still not going to be, you know, what we thought it was going to be 7-8 years ago. However many years ago that was, but
yeah,
you know, it's probably going to be a lopsided affair, and then the real show starts.
Yeah, I think it's funny. I think September is what we're all kind of looking forward to. And like you said, like, I think at this stage,
you know, we do a show just to say you're fighting two tune-ups. I just don't see how that works.
Yeah, no, I think September is probably going to be the big fight, you know. And at the end of the day, you got to pay the guy, you know. And those kind of fogs going around, but I think September has to equal an event that is going to get the casual public all eyes on them, on Canelo versus, and at this stage, I'm willing to bet he's probably fighting Benavidez, and a fight that, look, all of us wanted to see too, you know, like that's
what we wanted, yeah.
Yeah, right. I mean, I think the there's a huge majority of people who want to see that. We would have taken the Crawford fight too, but in all reality, to be fair, David Benavidez deserves this fight.
He just from a technical, logistic, the way of the law, Benavidez rightfully so should be getting this fight.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think
I feel bad for Caleb Plant too, because I felt like he should have been getting the moral fight, but you know, this is how the business works. I feel like the Charlos are on their, you know, I'm not trying to retire them, but they're on probably on their way.
We've been saying this though. I mean, I just think Al is paying he's giving them the paydays that they never got in these.
You always said that. You always said this is how it would end.
Right. And you know, it just is what it is. And it's, and again, I know it sounds like a foregone conclusion for me, but again, like, we're, the math is there, you know. And look, I'm gonna say this right up front, like, is this the same Canelo at 160? No, I'll say that, but I think it's still more than enough to beat this version of Jamal, who, again, I agree, I think he offensively, I think he's probably gonna take a little more chances, but potentially to his detriment down the stretch, you know. And, you know, but you know what, like, people, the thing with Canelo Alvarez that people just have to realize is that they're gonna tune in. Okay, the fight with Jermell did like 600 some thousand pay-per-view buys, which is like right on par with Crawford. You know, like a big fight, like, you know, technically, but you're right, I think all roads really lead to what the plan is for September. And I think that's what we're all really waiting for. And you know, there is a side of Canelo where, again, to be fair, like, he knows his worth, and he knows his price tag. But he's got an ego. He definitely has an ego and pride, I should say. That's probably the better word. There is pride there. And I know he's been hearing people saying, you know, you don't want to fight anybody. And, you know, and maybe he knows something we don't, you know, and he just meant to beat his fight. But I think September seems as if that is going to be the case. And I think really that I really hope that happens. I mean, I'll be front and center for that. But I mean, let's get, I obviously get past stage one and see the city. You know, see what the decision is going to be, and we'll find out. As you, like, again, if you, as you guys are watching us right now, you may already know, but you know, we're going to know very, very, very soon. So I think that's it for tonight, man. I mean, we got a lot in boxing in store. Like I said, we're going to be back talking about Tim Zhu and Keith Thurman and that whole card. There's, like I said, I mean, there's fights in May, April 20th. You know, we'll see Devin Haney. Look, that's going to be DAZN's biggest pay-per-view, not being joined with another promoter, you know, like, you know.
That's right.
I don't know if I don't know his contractual situation, but DAZN is putting this fight on, and they're not teaming up with another. They're not teaming up with the PBC.
I gotta check it too. I can't remember what they did. So we'll see.
But lots of boxing in store, man. So again, we're back. YouTube, you know, appreciate all the follows. You know, hit up the gram, Instagram.com/GYG Garge Grill Boxing. And then Facebook.com/GYG Box, man. Appreciate all the follows, the likes. Guys, hit us up today. Shout to the chat. You know,
we be cooking, man.
We be cooking. So tune in next time. As well as Spotify. You guys are on Spotify. We'll, you know, these shows will be up on there, the audio versions. So, you know, if you're in the bag or whatever, you know, just pop the earbuds in and, you know, just listen to the,
check it up. Yep.
So, all right, man. I'll check you, man. We out.